Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Marius Ruart. Let's get into the first news story of today, and the big number has come in, and that is the latest GDP growth figures. And in this quarter, the economy is growing again, sort of, kind of, not really. The stats say that South Africa's gross domestic product grew by 0.6% in the fourth quarter of 2024. After shrinking by 0.1% in the third quarter of 2024. This was slightly weaker than expected, with growth of around 0.8 expected, which is also just a very low number. A lot of this growth was the agricultural sector recovering from a bad third quarter it had, but there was also a little bit of growth in trade and accommodation, finance, real estate and business services, personal services, mining, construction, general government services, manufacturing, transport, electricity, gas, and water all saw reductions in terms of their contribution to GDP. And this basically means that the economy in South Africa over the whole year of 2024 grew at around 0.6%, which is down from 2023 when it grew at 0.7%. So growth is just not going anywhere right now. And the reason for that is made clear by many of more and more by us and by more and more analysts. The World Bank actually recently put out something saying that there are two very big problems in South Africa, and those are cumbersome regulatory rules and BEE. The World Bank said South Africa should end its excessive regulatory burden and revamp its black ownership laws to remove, quote, signs of paralysis that have resulted in incredibly slow economic growth over the last 10 years. The World Bank report says the burden of institutions has become excessive, not only for businesses and citizens, but also for public administration, and that the status quo in South Africa is most penalizing for small firms, which lack the capacity of financial means to navigate the complex system of rules and regulations, and for low-skilled workers who face a heavy income tax burden if formally employed. South Africa's economy has grown by an average of less than 1% annually over the past decade, a decade which has seen enormous amounts of mismanagement and decline in public services at the same time. Marius, this really is the big story in South Africa, because what does this lack of growth mean? It means high unemployment. It means that poor people are not escaping poverty. It means that middle-class people are not securing their place in the middle class. It means that rich people are thinking about moving to other places. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, it's all a bit concerning. If we had 0.6% economic growth last year, we also at the same time had population growth of about 1.3%. And that's probably been more or less the case since the Zuma year, since Jacob Zuma became president. So South Africans have been getting poorer every year. And if you look at GDP per capita in real terms, South Africans today are poorer than they were in 2007. I think that's when we actually peaked. That's when we had the highest GDP per capita. So yeah, things are definitely going backwards. And I think the World Bank's recommendations are spot on. I was reading an article about that on Business Live, and for a bank to operate in South Africa, it needs to. There's something like 300 regulations that it needs to, comply with. Obviously, you do want a bank to. Banking is probably one of the sectors that you do need some regulations, but 300 is a bit excessive. But it's also always in times like this when reform can happen. It's often in times of crisis that. The political kind of landscape opens for reform. There's always an example I like to talk about, which is India in the early 1990s. It faced a lot of the same problems as South Africa, quite low economic growth. It had a balance of payments issue. It actually had to airlift actual gold in from London to help pay its bills and so on. And that gave the country the finance minister at the time, Manmohan Singh, who later became prime minister, that gave him the space to start reforming the economy and getting rid of what they used to call the license raj, which was all these kind of regulations that companies had to, you know, meet and so on to be able to operate. And that saw, and getting rid of all that kind of stuff and also freeing up the labor market, India started growing at, you know, 6-7% a year. And growing at that kind of rate, they were lifting millions of people out of poverty every year. So that's what South Africa has to start doing. But just one thing on this, on the issue of India, there was always talk of the Hindu rate of growth, of economic growth in the 1960s and 1970s, 1980s and so on. There was this really moribund, slow economic growth. And one day I thought, you know, exactly how much was this average economic growth? And the Hindu rate of growth is something like 3%. You know, that's what was called by an economist. So if South Africa could get, if we were growing at 3%, that would change this country in 20 years. This place would be unrecognizable. People would be getting richer. You know, things would be changing so quickly and for the better. So yeah, just, I mean, that's what we need to start focusing on a country. That should be the only focus of the government, is how to get this economy growing at 3 or 5 or 5 or 6 or even more percent a year. And it's possible. Big economies can grow at that kind of rate, but you need to have the political will and you need to put the right kind of things in place. And we're not sure we got the political will, which means we won't get the right kind of engine in place to get the economy growing that quickly.
And there are so many examples now in the world of countries that were often quite poor, underdeveloped, had major political, economic problems, that managed to overcome those by embracing some of the right ideas. You don't have to do all of them. You just have to do some of them. Taiwan, Singapore, India, China, Vietnam. Many of these countries have things we don't really like about them, but they also all very definitely have the right ideas on a lot of economic issues. And those have transformed the lives for millions and millions of their citizens who have gone from living in states of kind of extreme poverty, similar to people from the medieval world, you know, living off of farmland and in extreme poverty, to now having actual engagement with the global economy, no longer facing things like starvation. And, you know, South Africa has an advantage in that we do have this developed finance sector, which is like the only sector in the economy that grows, even albeit very slowly. And yet we're just not leveraging that development to create further growth. And we're just sitting on this sort of straight, flat trajectory of slowly going down. And there is no excuse really anymore for it. We need to start actually doing what other countries have done to make themselves successful.
Yeah, and I just want to say that we don't need, like a lot of people use those Asian examples like you have, but there's lots of other places where they've changed their economic system. I think Eastern Europe is a very good example. There's lots of Eastern European countries now that are actually pretty rich, and they obviously were, you know, part of the old Soviet Union, or they were in the Soviet bloc. Places like Poland and the Baltic states. Poland, on the current trajectory, the average Pole is going to be richer than the average British person in about 2030. And that would have been unthinkable in the early 90s or late 1980s. And why? It's because Poland has embraced the free markets and all that kind of thing. You know, it doesn't have state intervention in its economy. And I mean, Poland is also a place people are leaving all the time. And I mean, Ireland's another example, Colombia to a certain degree. So there's lots of examples where people have done the right thing and they've started getting, and people have got richer, and which has all kinds of other knock-on effects just for, you know, people's being able to reach their full potential.
Exactly right. And Poland's another good example of how you don't need to get absolutely everything right. I believe their Reserve Bank has been a bit politicized, and the Law and Justice Party did some damage to the economy in the past couple of years. Yeah. But by and large, the trajectory has been one of enormous growth. And as you say, you know, looking at overtaking the UK in the next 5 or so years. All right. So we're going to be watching, obviously, the budget's impact when it is finally tabled. What is it? I think it's next week on the 12th of March, to see whether there are any signs that government has been forced to deal with these realities a little bit. But let's go on to talking about the internal squabbles inside the ANC. And there's an interesting little article here about the moves that Fikile Mbalula, the ANC Secretary General, has been making to place himself in a good position for 2027. Now, some of this is all kind of technical inside the ANC party stuff, so I'm not fully me myself, I don't fully grasp all of the implications of some of these changes he's made. But Mbalula has, for example, overhauled the deployment of National Executive Committee conveners to the provinces, replacing 8 out of the 9 original conveners and making adjustments after the 2024 elections. He's changed the subcommittees within the ANC's structures to give them different chair people, chairmen all over the place. So, for example, the Justice and Constitutional Development Minister, Minister Kubayi, has been removed as the chairperson of Economic Transformation, replaced with the current deputy in the trade and industry, the non-DA deputy in the trade and industry minister, Izuko Godlimpi. And a raft of other changes, somewhat bitterly, it seems, speaking to News 24, the person who was talking about this to the media anonymously said, if you look at the changes, it's obvious there is an agenda, and that agenda is 2027. Never mind the obvious distractions like appointing NDZ as the chairperson of one of the committees. It's clear he's preparing for 2027, and that's why he's reconfigured 8 deployed NEC positions. So, what do you make of this, Marius? It does seem, I think, like Fikile Mbalula is very much making plays to be the next leader of the ANC. I don't know if it'll work, but he clearly seems to be moving in that direction.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be also the worst thing in the world. He would definitely be better than Ponyaza Lesufi, and maybe even better than Paul Mashatile. Yeah, so better, he seems to be much more of a pragmatist. I don't think he's not nearly as much of a race nationalist as Ponyaza Lesufi. And there doesn't seem to be major corruption clouds hanging over him like there is over Paul Mashatile. But, you know, with probably anybody who's in the ANC, there's at least some kind of whiffs of corruption around the guy. But maybe if Mbalula starts looking like he's a front runner for the leadership of the ANC, we'll start seeing some things emerge. But I mean, he's in a pretty powerful position. He's the Secretary General, and he's been in the ANC for years now. You know, he used to be in the Youth League and so on. And yeah, I think he does give you a bit of a I don't know how to say this without insulting him too much, but a kind of a buffoonish vibe sometimes. Sometimes he does seem to have a bit of he handled, I think, the GNU negotiations fairly well last year, I think, after the election. And he did seem to have a bit of gravitas and dignity. I don't think Fakila Mbalula would be the absolute worst person to become leader of the ANC in 2027. I don't think it's not impossible that Cyril Ramaphosa is going to be the last ANC president of South Africa. So we saw in the polling from the SRF that you guys were spoken about here, without Ramaphosa, the ANC is only on flipping the low 20%. So maybe with somebody like Mbalula, obviously you'd have to poll and see if people like Mbalula. But the one other issue, Mbalula is also a Oza. And so he'd be and there hasn't been Oza to in charge of the ANC since Thabo Mbeki. So maybe you could also have some, you know, and maybe Oza people feel, you know, or the Oza faction, whatever you want to call it, will feel that it's their time again to have a go. So that could also see if we have this kind of a rotation of, the ethnic groups at the top of the ANC. So I think that could maybe also benefit him. And he's also from the Free State. And I don't think we've ever had a president from the Free State. So that could also, if we think there has to be like kind of a rotation and everybody needs to, each region or ethnic group needs to get their turn, that could also be in Mbalula's favor.
Well, certainly the ANC is relying more and more these days on the Eastern Cape to make up the sort of bulk of its political support. Remains Limpopo and the Eastern Cape in a big way are the sort of real centers of ANC ANC strength these days.
For the two parts, they do the best.
I've been very very mean to Fikile over the years, I must say. But when you look at the raft of who the ANC actually has kind of in a position to take the leadership, I think it's clear that he's the best. Not because he's an incredibly strong candidate, but just because so many of the others will drive the party into the sea. They just don't have any vision or ideas. They are not different from the EFF. They're surrounded by corruption allegations. They don't have any kind of track record of success.
Well, Mbalula is basically the tallest dwarf.
Yeah, there we go. So anyway, let us, I think, call it to a close there. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.